Part 4. The Naga and the Kating Vor. Was the giant bear a real species or merely a myth? One of the commonest mistakes people make when describing an unknown wild animal is making it bigger than it really is. This I had discovered years ago when researching one of my nature columns for the Boston Globe on the subject of phantoms of the woods. Minutes after Vermont's Fish and Wildlife Department released some martens, little squirrel-sized, tree-dwelling native weasels, a passerby spotted one of them. He phoned in a report of a thing the size of a cocker spaniel. Likewise, numerous reports of roaming panthers in New England turn out to be house cats. An injured eagle was really a black-backed gull. Strange creatures seen under emotional circumstances tend to become, in our imaginations, much larger and more exotic than they actually are. They're the source of so many big fish stories. We were well aware that that could be the case with reports of our giant bear. Then again, a surprising number of phantoms have turned out to be real. Such was the case with the man-like ape of the Congo described in the 19th century, which proved to be the gorilla. In New England, DNA testing of hairs found in the feces supposedly left by giant cats have shown that mountain lions indeed again roam the North Woods. Even stranger eyewitness reports have proved true. 12 people reported seeing a kangaroo hopping around Massachusetts in 1989, and authorities later captured a loose wallaby, possibly an escaped illegal pet. An armadillo showed up outside of Boston. It had hitchhiked in a trailer carrying a horse to Tufts Veterinary Clinic from Florida. A flamingo was found wading in a Vermont pond. It had blown in on a spring storm. Eyewitness accounts alone can't prove the existence of a strange or new animal. This is why science demands physical evidence. A live or dead specimen, a skin or a skull, a photograph or a video, or DNA. But even this may not be definitive, as we were soon to discover shortly after our return to the States with a new goat-like mammal known only from its horns, classified with the scientific name of Pseudonovibos spiralis, and known in Cambodia as the Kating Vor. Our friend Sun Hien had been fascinated by the reports of this animal. It had first been noted by scientists in December 1993, when German and Austrian scientists had procured several distinctive sets of horns in a market in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. They later obtained more from Cambodia. Amber to black, round to laterally flattened, the lyre-shaped horns curl conspicuously backward at the tip and are corrugated with 13 to 21 ring-like ridges along the entire length. In 1994, the team announced their findings in a prestigious Dresden journal, a new bovid from Vietnam and Cambodia. What animal went with the horns? Was it a new kind of wild ox, a mountain sheep, a wild goat, or was it a kind of antelope? Museum curators and taxonomists around the world joined the debate. Robert Timm, the mammal curator at the University of Kansas, realized he already had two sets of horns of the new animal in his collection. Donated along with many other specimens, then of greater interest in 1930, the 70-year-old horns had been presumed to have belonged to a female couperae from Vietnam. Male couperae's massive horns sweep outward at an obtuse angle and are frayed at the tip. Females are more delicate and spiral upward in the same shape as the Kating Vor's. However, couperae horns lack the distinctive annulations, Timm pointed out, which these had. Based on his careful observations, he concurred with the majority of other scientists. To him, it looked as though this was not only a new species, but a new genus, and was probably a new kind of wild ox. Then, in 1999, the year we had begun to search for the golden moon bear, molecular data reclassified the missing animal. Isolating the mitochondrial DNA from horn fragments, Austrian and German scientists compared their sequences with those of wild sheep, oxen, antelope, and goats. They determined, to everyone's surprise, that the Kating Vor was more closely related to sheep and goats. Meanwhile, teams of biologists dispersed to the forests of Southeast Asia to try to find the animal. Our friends George Schaller and Hunter Weiler were among those looking for the creature, and we'd have done so too if Sun Hien had been free the previous summer, as the three of us had hoped. scientists from around the world purchased more horns from markets in Vietnam and Cambodia. To my knowledge, this is the only wild mammal on the face of the earth that we know positively exists but have never seen, Hunter Weiler told the New York Times. Species accounts of the animal, based on eyewitness descriptions collected from local hunters, such as those Kimche had amassed, appeared in IUCN references and textbooks published by university presses. Based on verbal accounts, its range was described and maps appeared showing the provinces of Cambodia and Vietnam where the animal was supposed to live. The creature was awarded an official conservation status by IUCN. It is listed as endangered, and thus, at least in theory, is internationally protected. But then, in early 2001, just as we returned to the States from our third expedition, we found the mysterious Kating Voor facing a fate worse than extinction. It may never have existed at all. While we'd been in Laos, Sun Hien had kindly added our names to the growing list of scientists and conservationists discussing the Kating Voor in an email conversation. When we returned, we soon learned that Arnaud Sauveau of the Zoological Society of Paris had just spent 7 months scouring Cambodian forests, and unsurprisingly, like the other scientists before him, caught no glimpse of the animal. When he returned to France, however, he happened upon 4 sets of antique horns, which he recognized instantly as those of the Kating Voor. They had been collected by the French colonial Edmond Marchand in Indochina in 1925. These were subjected to a very rigorous DNA extraction technique. This time, scientists used as their samples bone from the skull fragments to which the horns connected. DNA extracted from the bone of museum specimens, they argued, is less subject to disintegration or contamination than the keratin of the horns. In a previous study, the Austrian and German researchers, whose results had classified the animal as a new kind of sheep or goat, had just finished extracting DNA from 6 populations of chamois using the same lab where their Kating Voor samples were sequenced. This, asserted Sauveau's colleague and co-author, molecular scientist Alexandra Hassanin, may have contaminated their samples, accounting for the unexpected classification. But Hassanin and Sauveau's results were more surprising yet. Their findings were unambiguous. The nucleotide sequences of the Kating Voor matched exactly with those of the Asian domestic cow. The astonished researchers next tried to figure out how the horns of a cow had taken on such a strange shape. Their conclusion: humans had created them. Their scenario matched what the market vendor had told our friend Jerry Schroering in Cambodia. The originally smooth horn sheaths had been carved to obtain the ripples. The lyre-like twist in the upper part of the horns had been created by torsion, probably after softening and heating. This would not be the first time that scientists had been victims of a hoax, Gary noted. This situation is very similar to that of the Yeti in the 1950s, he observed. Scientific papers were published. There were plenty of sightings. The Yeti was even given a scientific name. Dinanthropoides nivalis, terrible ape of the snows. One specimen was analyzed at the Field Museum, collected by no less a figure than Sir Edmund Hillary, who had built a new school for a monastery in Nepal in exchange for borrowing the venerated scalp for scientific analysis. Field Museum scientists determined the hair and skin had belonged to a takan or sero, both goat-like bovids often hunted for food in the Himalayas, and molded on a conical wooden form so that it resembled a scalp. Likewise, the famous 1934 photo of the Loch Ness Monster was faked. The black-and-white photo of the brontosaur-like neck rising from the Scottish lake had been created by mounting a whittled piece of wood to a child's toy submarine, a trick to which one of its perpetrators confessed just before his death more than 6 decades later. Some of these Kating Voor horns even look like the fake Loch Ness Monster neck, Gary observed. Scientists aren't used to having people deliberately fool them, Gary said. A cop may be good at figuring these things out. A magician would be good at it. But a scientist just doesn't think that way. They're used to dealing with the natural world, not with human artifice. But Gary, like a detective from one of his beloved whodunits, threw himself with gusto into the email discussion group and offered up plausible ways the mystery had come to be. How to account for all the sightings? Bantang, gaur, kuprey, and wild cattle often graze together and may even hybridize. They're often difficult to distinguish one from another at a distance, especially without field glasses. In Khmer, Kating simply means gaur. Richard Melville, a retired trustee of Johns Hopkins University, noted two names for the gaur. When he had hunted in Cambodia in his younger days, locals had called the gaur both Kating Vor and Kating Pu. Possibly, Gary suggested, Vor may have been used as a modifier to describe differences in the horns. Perhaps, like the golden moon bear, and possibly the giant bear as well, the Kating Vor was a striking variant of a known species. What about the Kansas City horns? After all, everyone supposed the animals they had come from had been shot by the donor, American Richard L. Sutton. But this may have been an erroneous assumption. The tag on these horns noted they were from Soi Kiet. Gary looked up the location in an old Indo-Chinese encyclopedia from the early 1930s and found it to be right along a railroad line that Sutton Jr. may have taken while on a trip to procure tiger bait. There was a thriving market there. The horns were probably purchased as curios. But why would anyone purposely create horns for a non-existent animal? Because all the specimens used in the study were collected in 1925 in Indochina, Savoie and Hassanin wrote in a February 2001 article in Les Comptes Rendus, L'Académie des Sciences de Paris, we suspected that ancient worship traditions, rather than scientific forgery, could explain the occurrence. However, the reasons motivating such ethnic practices remain a real mystery. This Gary solved, too. He had read in an article published well before the Kating Vor's authenticity was questioned that the people of India had long believed that the spiral-horned mountain goat, the Markhor, eats snakes, almost certainly what fostered confidence in the magical property of the horns. I'll just bet that this is another cultural theme exported from India, he said. Had a sudden demand for Markhor horn arisen in Southeast Asia? What was the local vendor to do? Medieval druggists in Europe faced a similar problem when unicorn horn was in high demand as an antidote to poison. Traders solved it for them by selling the spiraling tusk of an Arctic whale, the narwhal, and billing it as the actual horn of a mythical beast. In Southeast Asia, suppliers for the local apothecary trade may have been similarly inspired to provide a substitute for the product in demand, either by manufacturing one or by using the horns of an unusual kuprey or gaur. Solving any mystery always brings Gary great delight. It all tied up so neatly, every unexpected element falling into place at last, like the last whirlwind pages of a good whodunit. I admired his detective work. But I found the conclusion deeply unsettling. It wasn't so much that scientists had been led astray. On our bear quest, we'd already seen firsthand how easily and innocently misunderstandings can happen. What disturbed me so deeply was that the Kating Vor was not a miracle of evolution, but an invention of commerce. I was beginning to feel that in Southeast Asia, commerce reigned supreme. The marketplace both extinguished real species and created fake ones, undermining both science and story, fooling the biologists and mocking the gods. But happily, this isn't always the case. Sometimes, too, a real creature arises from the deep ocean of mystery and shows its face to science. I had wandered into a small travel agency in Thailand when I saw it, a framed black-and-white photograph showing a dozen American GIs lined up for the picture. Before them stretched a huge but slender water monster, more than 20 feet long, which they held rather like a team of Amazon explorers might display a huge anaconda. But though it was long and slender, this was no snake. A strange, deflated, ruffle-like fin extended from the top of the head down the back of the tail. It was clearly some kind of monstrous fish. All over Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia, we'd seen creatures like this before. They adorned the balustrades of all the temples, were painted on the walls, depicted in mosaics. In art, unlike in death, the finny topknot was erect like a dragon's crest. The mouth gaped open, and the eyes glowed with glass or marble. Such beauty and awesome strangeness befitted a magical creature, the one who gave birth to the land of Cambodia, who built the great capital of the Kingdom of a Million Elephants, and who continues to dwell among the peoples of Southeast Asia, blessing the life-giving waters of their rivers. As if there was ever any doubt of the identity of the creature, beneath the photo was a caption printed in English: Queen of the Nagas, seized by American Army at Mekong, Lao military base, on June 27, 1973. I rushed to show Gary. Wait till you see this, I told him. He recognized the fish at first glance. Oh, he said, it's Regalicus glesnae. He had read about these creatures when he was in college, in a big Time Life picture book on oceans. Regalicus glesnae is a Latin name for the giant oarfish, so named for its elongated oar-like belly fins. A rare, deep-water, fragile giant, its long, deep, narrow body can weigh 600 pounds and stretch more than 30 feet long. Later, when I would read more about it, I was struck by how local artwork captured the features of the living creature in ways the photograph of the dead specimen could not. Indeed, the giant oarfish does erect a crimson plume-like crest on the head, just as the temple decorations show. It swims in a serpentine motion, as it seems to do as it glides down temple banisters. The artists, too, were wise to show the Naga's jaws agape. Regalicus glesnae belongs to the piscine order Allotrigonathae, or strange jaws, so named because the distinctive protractile mouth is worked with a different system of muscles and bones than in other fish. This astonishing giant has inspired fear and gratitude among peoples who've glimpsed it in waters throughout the world. One source mentioned it may have inspired the Latin poet Virgil's famous exclamation, "Horresco referens," horrifying memory about monsters sent to strangle Lan Kun and his sons. Their breasts rise among the billows, their bloody crests tower over the waves. Their burning eyes shine red with blood and flame, and their tongues, like a dart, flicker in their mouths, which they lick, hissing. In Norwegian waters, where the scientific type specimen was found, fishermen called it King of the Herrings. If anyone injured one of these giants, it was believed the herring would, in retribution, avoid their nets. In Laos, the old legend is still told of a Naga who lives in a hole by the holy spire of Vientiane's Tat Dam Stupa, who will rise up and defend the Laotian people if they're threatened. I could only hope that in modern Southeast Asia, beset at once by the terrors of war and the market greed of new peace, the people would remember the ancient powers of their deepest, wildest places and summon the courage and foresight to bring about redemption.